Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We continue, actually conclude our General Assembly preview that we've been doing this week. Caroline Delegate Bobby Orrick from the 54th District in this morning. Bobby, great to have you here this morning.
Good to be in, bottom of the barrel, as it were. But anyway,
you're the one batting cleanup here,
okay.
And you can take care of things. When I saw that you've been 1990 was that
my first session?
Your first
be my
session,
32nd. Yeah.
Wow. What's the number now?
Number three.
Okay.
With that and a dollar, I can get a soda at McDonald's.
Well, yeah. And you have to buy your own plate. You taught me that a couple of years ago. I thought at least the one thing the General Assembly would, the state would provide you would be that license
get
plate.
Get that vanity plate fee plus an additional $25 special administration fee we pay to DMV so they can keep track of the 140 House and Senate member numbers.
Okay.
Go figure.
Interesting.
But anyway.
Before we jump into what's going to be an interesting session, just of how it's done with COVID and everything, I'm sure we all watched with interest yesterday, and it was heartbreaking and shocking to see some of the things that we saw.
That's not how democracy is supposed to work. We are a government of laws, and that cuts across. You know, the laws are there to protect all of us, whether we agree or not. There's a process whereby we can go through changing them. Yesterday was just unfortunately one of the worst examples of when people's emotions overrule common sense and logic and just decency among individuals. You know, you don't go busting through barriers. They're there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Law enforcement, which, you know, I thought that the Republicans were all about, you know, protecting the blue and all that. Yeah, and then we're going to just run over top of them. And so that was definitely one of the worst moments that I can imagine we would ever see, hopefully we'll ever see. And my heart goes out to anybody injured in that. But by the same token, the message that sends to our young people and all is definitely mm-hmm. a message not that we want to cultivate by any measure.
Boy, and you say, and especially after just some of the riots and the protests that we saw over the summer, to see images of people sitting in the speaker's chair,
yes.
and how it ever even got that far. I mean, that to me was just, I kept staring at it and just thinking that can't be what I'm looking at.
Yeah. It was a dark day.
So in a way it shows you, and we've talked about this over the years, of just how political discourse has just gone down and the way things are done has really, and especially in recent years. You wonder. The only thing I looked at yesterday and wondered, I hope, does this put us at so low now to where maybe this is as low as we can go? And there can be some kind of building up, so we never get to this point.
That hopefully both sides see that this isn't government. This is anarchy, and we can't have a government and a society and a nation under a rule of anarchy. That we're a representative democracy.
Yeah.
And there's a process whereby we go through change, and the process is flawed, but there's a means whereby you can fix those flaws over time.
I remember, especially in the early days and the years gone by when we would talk about how compromise was worked at, and we saw a lot of that in Richmond. And in Richmond too, you always could say, well, we're not Washington. We're not the federal government. But unfortunately, it has just permeated all the politics and even local. I see things locally that I never would have seen years ago.
Yeah. And I mean, Ted, I've been there, like I say, this is my 32nd session. So when I came in, we were in the minority. The Democrats had the House, the Senate, and the governor's mansion.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an entirely different type of government than what we've seen this past year in session. Unfortunately, at least from the House of Delegates perspective, I don't feel we have a representative democracy anymore. We've got an autocracy. They've got the numbers. They don't even listen to us. During the special session, as a case in point, that we went to virtually, which I'll talk about that in a moment, there were at least two different occasions that I tried to speak on measures and was summarily ignored. There were other times in the committee process, again, a virtual committee process, I was ignored. And it's because it's virtual and they're running the board, as it were, they can see who wants to speak, but if they don't punch the right button, you don't show up on the screen.
Yeah.
So no one in the world knows. They talk about the transparency it brings because anybody can monitor it. Well, that's kind of like the transparency you get from watching your television at home. You don't get to control what's on the screen. You can pick any channel you want, mm-hmm. but the message is being predetermined by whatever the producer of that program wants you to hear. And that's not unlike what we're seeing in the virtual session. There were a number of times in committee meetings, individuals told me they signed up to speak, they were in the queue, and were just never called on. And there's no way for them to document that.
Yeah.
The whole process whereby, you know, rules don't matter. And when I was there the first session 32 years ago in the minority, rules mattered. They knew they were going to win the game. They didn't have to change the rules. They also listened to our side. And candidly, many times they would hear good ideas from our side that they would then put in their own bill to do that.
Yeah.
But they at least listened. And what I saw, especially during the special session, they didn't even listen. They didn't even take up Republican bills that were introduced. Probably the most striking example of why things don't matter, the House rules did not allow for a virtual meeting, which is why when we went into special session, our first meeting was in person. We went to the Siegel Center, and we met in person and convened.
Yeah.
The rules can be changed if you meet for 5 days and read the rules, and they would have had the votes to do so by a simple majority. But that wasn't sufficient for them. They immediately passed a resolution contrary to the rules to allow us to vote to change the rules without meeting And so I asked the speaker when we met virtually and had the vote, I said, Madam Speaker, by what means are we able to meet and vote virtually to change the rules so that we can meet virtually?
Sure.
And she had no answer. But they had over 50 votes, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And that's what we've seen, unfortunately, throughout this special session. We saw it to a measure during the regular session of last year, but it just got even worse during the special session. As that, I hate to sound so pessimistic, but I fear that's what we're going to see in the 30-day upcoming session. The speaker has already changed the rules unilaterally. The rules say that members can introduce 15 bills. There's a bill limit on the House in the short session. She unilaterally has said, no, it's going to be 7.
Yeah.
And we're going to change the rules next Wednesday when we meet for the first time to limit it to 7. Oh, but by the way, you know, the rules that allow you to introduce more than 7 don't change until next Wednesday, but we're going to make them retroactive.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you talk about that because when Mark Cole was in the other day, he said the same thing. And he talked about how his computer froze up a couple of times and he missed out, and that he knew of people that had come to the virtual committee meetings. And although it seemed like a good idea that you don't have to come to Richmond for it, it's not a good idea if you never get called on.
Ted, let me ask, how effective would you be in your job if you couldn't sit down and talk to people face to face?
Right. It's not nearly as much.
And especially if you don't agree on a matter.
Yeah. Right.
You know, the premise behind democracy in my mind is where individuals can get together, and I say individuals because everybody's got, you know, their own views, and come to a consensus. And that's why I say we don't have a democracy in the House of Delegates right now. We've got an autocracy that the 55 Democrat House members, they come to a consensus. And the other 45 Republican members who represent statistically 45% of the state, our views are just summarily ignored. And that's not what it's supposed to be. You're always supposed to consider the views of the minority. You know, every year when I've gotten elected, one, I knew I didn't get 100% of the vote.
Yeah.
So I knew not everybody voted for me or agreed with me, but I'm supposed to represent 100% of the people. And I'm supposed to potentially moderate as much as I can within my personal principles, their views, and take them into consideration. Government works best when it moves in an incremental fashion, but we sure haven't seen that over this past year. And I fear this short session is going to be just more of the same, if not worse.
We're going to continue on. This is good stuff. Delegate Bobby Orrock here this morning from the 54th District includes Caroline, parts of Caroline, and parts of Spotsylvania. We'll take a quick break and return on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Shuler.
Caroline Delegate Bobby Orrock here this morning as we preview the General Assembly session. Bobby, as you were talking the last time, I mean, I could hear it in your voice and see it on your face. When we talk about things like rules, that's one of the things that I think you've always been known for. Is the process in making sure just even the littlest thing of Robert's rules is followed, because it's all there for a reason.
Right. I mean, Robert's rules and Jefferson's manual, which is actually the true document that the legislature goes by. Our founding fathers put rules in place for a reason, because they knew majorities would shift over time and over the years, but the rules allow the process to continue in an organized pace and organized fashion, and is there to protect both sides. Rules are there to prevent the majority at that point in time from running roughshod over the minority and shutting them down.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, to protect the minority opinion, to make sure that it has a forum to be heard as well. You know, by analogy, and this was one of my great frustrations during special session, I guess, in particular, because we didn't know when we were even going to be meeting. And the analogy, you know, when I was a kid, I played Little League. Not very well, and on a team that didn't win very often.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we began the season, we knew we weren't going to be winning the pennant, as it were. We knew we were going to lose most all the games. But two things we knew going in. One, we had a schedule.
Yeah.
And we knew when the games were going to be played. We didn't know that during the special session, because it was all when the majority decided we were going to have our next meeting, how long it was going to last, all those kind of things. And secondly, we knew the rules that we were going to be playing by. But there again, they changed at the whim of the current majority, you know, as much as it worked to their advantage. I've had someone suggest, you know, recently, as I've made some comments to this effect during the special session, this is just sour grapes because I'm in the minority now. No, I started out in the minority. And when we were in the minority, then the majority Democrats that ruled in the early 1990s, and I was underneath the Democrat majority for almost a decade, rules mattered. They recognized that it was more important to go by the rules and achieve their objective. They knew they were going to win the game, so they right. don't have to change the rules and cheat to get there.
Yeah.
And that's my frustration. It's to protect everybody, because that's what a representative democracy has to do, or else we become like so many other governments we've seen around the world that have failed, where they become all just one-sided, lopsided autocracies, and the people aren't then represented.
So why are they doing this? Have you been able to figure out why this is happening?
One, because I think they don't take a long-term view. They're very impatient. In the House especially, if you look at the tenor of service of the Democrat majority, mm-hmm. they're very new in service. And they don't, I don't feel they recognize the implications when you change the past custom and practice. You know, there was a reason the Democrats, who held the majority up until almost 2000 for how many hundred years?
About, I was going to say, yeah.
There was a reason they set that process in place, because they knew the vagaries of politics, it may someday change. And the institution and process is more important, or was to them at that time, than the short-term political benefit they might feel they would achieve by ramrodding things through. A majority of the current majority, and I can't say that all the House Democrat peers of mine feel this way, but a majority of their caucus feels, nope, we've got the reins, we're going to turn this horse around, we're going to run off in the opposite direction, and the rules and everything else are disregarded to do that.
You said, I'll never forget, a couple years ago before there was the switch, you had said before the session, in a separate meeting and then on air, and talked about if there's a Democrat majority, these are the issues that you're going to see, and they'll be passed quickly, and they were then some.
Yeah. And don't accuse me of being a prophet or
you were right on.
I didn't know there was going to be a test, and I was going to have to remember what I said some years ago. But that's exactly what they've tried. And yeah, to your point, even more so than I imagined. The most recent that we've just seen, where the Crime Commission, which is controlled at present by the Democrats because they've got the majority, is going to be recommending doing away with all mandatory sentence provisions. One of the reasons that Virginia has seen such a decrease in overall crime rate, when you look at what the national oversight groups, you know, is because Virginia has a tough on criminals policy in place. And there are certain crimes where you need to send the message, if you do thus and so, you're going to get this or worse. Because that's the only way you're going to deter individuals if they do feel that the punishment's going to be harsh. Maybe I can do this.
One of the things, and Doug and Bobby Orrick here this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA, one of the things I will miss with the virtual session and did with the special session, the House especially debates, it's very personal the way the debate goes, more so than the Senate, and you don't have that. You don't have that anymore, and with a virtual setting. And like you said, I think you would if you were in a big space like the Senate does.
Well, and no question. I mean, when we were in the House chamber, there were always visitors. You know, there was the press in the back row. There were visitors in the gallery. So if the speaker summarily ignored an individual member who was standing to get her attention, it was obvious. Well, it's not obvious anymore.
Yeah.
Because virtual world, hey, nobody stood because I didn't push the button. And there's no way for you in the fourth estate of the press to know that. Because as you're monitoring on your virtual screen, you don't see what the speaker sees because your screen's not her screen. And so it's not a transparent process. It's very much opaque at best and controlled by the producers of the internet system that you're watching.
The reason, obviously, for the virtual session is what we're dealing with the pandemic. Is there any more? I know there's been some frustration at times over the governor summarily making all of these decisions. And as far as I know, the General Assembly has never had any say in any of it.
We have not. And you know, people ask
should
me,
you have?
Oh, I think no question that it was never envisioned within the writers of our state constitution that the governor would have unfettered and unrestricted time limits on an emergency declaration. There was legislation introduced, both House and Senate, during the special session that would have limited the governor's powers as it relates to an emergency declaration to 30 days, during which time, in order to extend it, the legislature would have to come together to concur with the extension of that. Right now, we could be in an emergency declaration, you know, until the governor steps out of office next January.
Right.
And that's 100% controlled by if he wants to keep it going or not. When what we have known, and I say we, that the Republican caucus in the House has not been apprised of when sessions have been coming up, typically until the day before it's released to the public. And there have been some occasions when I've actually picked up the newspaper or heard on the radio something that was going to happen before we were even advised directly. That's just the way the government is working right now in an autocratic regime.
It is. It's been tough on me. I know during the special sessions, certain topics that I knew were due to be coming up, I missed them several times because I didn't realize, or I had missed an email or had missed something and hadn't noticed something, and it's very hard to follow.
And what we have been told about the schedule for the coming session. Sessions have always started at 12 noon, while our virtual sessions for this year after Wednesday when we meet to organize, because the Constitution says we have to meet on the second Wednesday at noon. Well, after that, we're going to change the rules.
Of course.
And going to meet at 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock is
for the
so
rest
different.
Of the session.
Yeah.
Committee meetings will begin virtually, starting at 7 o'clock in the morning and running up until that time, and then potentially running after session, a half hour after. So I guess nobody's supposed to get any sleep, especially the public who might be, quote, monitoring and this transparency. I don't see how that works to government's advantage and the people's advantage. But the good news, Constitution says we have to have a 30-day session, which can be extended. The purpose of the second year of the session is to address the budget, which we just addressed 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So the Republican caucus is unwilling to extend it beyond the 30 days mandated by the Constitution. The Democrats want it to go 45 or longer. But we're saying, no, we just addressed the budget. The governor just signed it middle of November.
Mm-hmm.
How much fixing do we need to do from what numbers we had in the middle of November? So the good news is the short session will be the shortest I've ever experienced.
I was going to say, I never remember a session that short.
The rest of the story, though, is the Democrats could declare a special session immediately upon adjournment of the short session. So stay tuned, sports fans. We'll have to see how that, but hopefully this travesty in how government is supposed to be conducted will be very short-lived session-wise, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. Now, you're the one, when I say that the rules are important to you, all the years, and especially in recent years when the floor session started being broadcast online, I always knew it was you when I would hear, I'd have it on in the background, and there would be Mr. Speaker, point of order. And I knew that was the gentleman from Carolina.
And Ted, you saw me do that just as much when we had Republican majorities and Republican governors, and we ran the show down there, mm-hmm. as any other time. Rules matter.
Yeah.
Because they're there for everybody's protection.
No, there were times it went against the Republicans,
right.
And sometimes you could tell Speaker Howell had this look on his face of, please sit down, Delegate O'Rourke, and you didn't.
Sit down. No, I didn't.
No, there was, and it was always, because I would say to you, how in the world do you keep up on this? It would be some of the minute little things, but you were rarely overruled, rarely. If ever.
And when it was, the speaker could have been wrong. I'm just
saying. Could have been, yes. Delegate Bobby O'Rourke from Caroline County here this morning. Caroline in Spotsylvania in the 54th District. We'll talk about some issues coming up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 831.
Okay, listen. We got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg. A Centennial Broadcasting Station. Opinion. We've all got them, and we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Caroline Delegate Bobby O'Rourke here this morning on News Talk 1230 WFA. As we preview the session, it starts on the 13th, and again, it's a much different session. This probably says more, Bobby, about me than it does anything of where, to me, the first day of the General Assembly to me was better than opening day. I got excited about it, and there was just energy in the House with all the, and just because of the history in Virginia too, and to come down there, there's nothing like it to do virtually, I know it has to be done certain ways now, but it certainly is different this year.
Well, and it doesn't have to be virtual,
right?
The Senate has proven. Even the House has proven during our special session first day where we met in the Siegel Center. We can all gather in the same room, be socially distanced,
mm-hmm.
and actually, have press in the back and have a regular sort of session.
Yeah.
I understand the COVID precautions because, I know individuals. Senator Ben Chafin just passed away, unfortunately, from the COVID. House members have come down positive with it. Just across the aisle, my seatmate, Tommy Wright, was hospitalized for over 2 weeks with COVID back during the term of the special session. It's real. There's a danger. But you also can, recognize we can work around that. We use mm-hmm. masks. We social distance. We do the proper precautions. And we don't have to just go and sit in our little home cubicles and talk to one another over the computer all the time. We can actually do government in an open public setting and still not be at risk. Congress is still doing it. Our federal government is recognized as dysfunctional as they are, that to go to a virtual setting would be even more dysfunctional. Why the leadership within the House of Delegates doesn't feel the same way is beyond me.
And I guess I would think too that you've still got office hours, and I'm sure you have continued to meet with constituents.
And my assistant just put out, I believe yesterday, I told her to, so I hope she did, that during the short session mm-hmm. we got coming, rather than coming to meet me in Richmond, We'll be taking appointments at my local office in the 4 Mile Fork area. Mm-hmm. We are going to be requesting appointments. We will have folks come in to visit once at a time. We will ask them to wear a mask. You know, we're not going to limit to just one person. So if, you know, my office area is large enough that two or three people on the same issue can come in and we can speak together safely. And in to that respect, it will be a little easier for people locally to communicate with me because they're not going to have to drive to Richmond for a face-to-face.
Right.
But they will need to call my local office. We're going to be having regular office hours, 9 to – the office will be there 9 to 5, but since session is at 4 o'clock, then realistically we won't be taking appointments after 3, but, you know, and before 9 potentially even if people – that suited their schedule better. So, you know, yeah, I'm going to be available. I'll be meeting with folks and communicating – as much as possible in a normal fashion and in a face-to-face fashion.
Speaking of issues, you're a retired teacher now. Is that how I can refer to you?
Yes, you
at?
Can.
I can you as a retired teacher. Sometime we'll have to do we will do a show and just talk about the years of how you how you juggled mm-hmm. being a teacher and being a legislator, because it was tough sometimes.
Well, the short answer, during the many years, I took a 2-month leave without pay. I lined up my own substitute.
Yeah,
and I came in weekends, put the grades in the grade book. I did the lesson plans in advance, and so that was the biggest juggling.
Yeah, no, that was it. I remember you doing that all those years. Education funding. I mean, I know school districts around here, Spotsylvania, is very concerned about what's going to happen as far as education funding goes.
And the wild card is the budget in general, Ted. The budget we just adopted and the governor just signed in November, I think, is based on unrealistic revenue projections. As the pandemic continues, we know the implications that it's having in revenues. We know the implications it's having in the private sector economy. The bigger wild card in my mind is, while on the one hand I understand the reason for the stimulus monies the federal government is sending down, most people think, okay, this is kind of like free money. No, this is just adding to the bottom line of the federal debt, mm-hmm. which at some point there's going to have to be a day of reckoning. And is that day of reckoning going to be in reductions in other areas from the federal government to state programs, and so the state's going to have to pick up the slack there? Are we looking at, even in this upcoming second half of the biennial budget, given that I think the revenues are too optimistic, are we looking at further cuts that are going to have to be made? And all of that has implications on the education funding, which is the 500-pound gorilla after Medicaid. Of the state budget. That's where the majority of the money goes, and rightly so. My bigger concern is, as a former educator, we know there's a significant portion of the students out there who aren't going to do very well
right.
unless they have extra assistance, that the virtual setting and independent learning, largely as it is, isn't going to meet their educational needs. We also know there's a significant percentage that can, but if they're not kind of being pushed. And I saw a large percentage of those in my program areas over the years.
Yeah.
And my concern is, while the virtual setting might be addressing the needs of the majority of the students, there's a significant percentage that we know are not getting the education they need because they need more than just sitting in front of a computer with hopefully a family system behind them to support them. And we're not providing that now for over a year, it looks like, and maybe even longer. I don't know how we balance all that in the pandemic setting we're in.
And I wonder, because Dr. Baker was here just a few weeks ago and talked about how they were expecting the biggest summer school they've mm-hmm. ever had because of this, and that'll add, there'll be an expense there to provide all that they're going to have to provide.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, you think if the federal government does make some reductions, already education, already fire and police locally are behind what they should be. This is going to become not only a state issue, it's going to become a huge right. local issue for the localities.
Yep. And the other wild card, medically, how long is this pandemic going to be with us? Are the vaccines going to have the herd immunity in the near term that we hope they will?
Yeah.
We're seeing, new strains of this vaccine, of this virus coming out,
yep.
and are the vaccines we have going to be effective against them?
Yeah.
So.
Boy, it's, Who knew? A year ago when we had this discussion.
Yeah, certain religious folks would say this is all just, you know, the end times and part of Revelation. So
It's all out there.
That's why I go to church every Sunday to do my gospel program. But anyway.
That's right. We did mention that you're the one guest I can have here that if something were to happen to me and I were to keel over, you could walk around here.
I could run the board.
You could run the board and keep the show going. So I always feel as though you're an insurance policy.
But since
here.
They wouldn't pay me, I wouldn't.
Yeah, no. Exactly. You can walk out dead air. Bobby Orrick here this morning. The other thing I think we've seen through all of this was, as you look at state unemployment insurance and DMV, they have been two areas where you just look at and the state has really struggled. But DMV, if you don't want to mention
Virginia Employment Commission and folks not getting an unemployment check for months.
Yeah, same thing.
But DMV, go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, but both whether it's been unemployment or DMV, government has failed us. There's no other way around it, and big time.
Yeah, and I think that has to come to, the root of that goes to Richmond, and our governor's administration and priorities and directives from there. And also, I think, just kind of a unilateral view of things from his perspective and his immediate advisors and not reaching out and talking to the folks out in the trenches.
I know people with state unemployment insurance haven't gotten anything from the beginning. You have been months without a job and have gotten nothing. Yeah. And you just feel for them.
And we're very frustrated as people contact my office.
Right.
We can only communicate with them by email. They don't talk to us either. And so that's been very frustrating as I'm trying to intervene and assist folks. The state's supposed to be there to serve the public, not to build walls to keep them all out.
Yeah. It appears that the governor is pushing the legalization of marijuana, and so I would guess that in some shape or form, that is going to get through this session.
I think that's a given. Unfortunately, I mean, one thing I've done even longer than politics or teaching, Ted, is I've been a member of the rescue squad, and I've just never seen the logic of anything that's going to alter an individual's mental capacities. Of being something that we as a state should promote. Then the other piece of this from a more, I guess, purist fashion, I took an oath to support the state and federal constitutions, and there's this little provision called federal supremacy that if the federal government says something is illegal, the state can't turn around and say that it is. And so even if I embraced the concept, until the federal government has made this a legal substance, I don't see how any state can change their laws in such a fashion. Hmm. Oh, go ahead. We're just going to ignore the federal government because, so there's that point too. But I mean, just I think public policy is wrong on this one. All the medical evidence that I've seen, we have approved cannabis products for medical purposes and set in place a process because there are certain very legitimate medical uses for that product. But this isn't the way to go in my mind.
I know states like Colorado have done it, and Colorado is not Virginia, and so I'm assuming that what we do will not look like there, or might it?
I don't assume anything as it relates to what we're going to be doing. When we have implemented policies over this past special session that go further in other areas, not on marijuana, but in other areas, more to the left of California, it's like, yeah, I would have never seen this coming, but it sure did, and it went into effect. And it to me is just another example. The current majority is not listening to different opinions and moderating their view. Jim Robertson, who was professor emeritus at Virginia Tech, long-term Civil War historian.
Yeah.
I was at an event where he spoke, and he said, the key to democracy is compromise. If you don't have compromise, you don't have democracy. You have autocracy. And that's why I've said throughout our program this morning, we don't have a democracy right now because they're not compromising. They don't listen to our views. They pay them lip service at best, and then they go ahead with what they were going to do in the first place.
Have you heard from, because and that was never more apparent in the whole criminal justice reform debate, and I know that law enforcement around here privately said things to me about how alarming some of these provisions are going to be when they're implemented.
And even if they're well-intentioned, the legislation they put forward typically goes too far in trying, you know, they're taking a sledgehammer to address the problem of a gnat. And that's not to minimize some of the issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, law enforcement is made up of individuals, and that's going to mean there are flaws, there are problems, there are individual problems that a person might bring to their job. But you don't summarily throw out all the existing law enforcement policies and law enforcement networks. You don't restrict their funding more so. You do implement additional training as needed, things of that nature, but they've just gone way too far in their proposals. The law enforcement are there to protect us all. They are, yes, accountable to us all. But you know, we're not supposed to be micromanaging them from the state level down either.
Doug and Bobby Orrock here this morning from the 54th. The 54th district. I mean, you've been the 54th the whole time,
yeah.
So I don't know why I can't remember that. Caroline and Spotsylvania, parts of Caroline and Spotsylvania is where he is at. We'll wrap this up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Shubin.
Caroline Delegate Bobby Orrock, our special guest this morning. The 54th District includes parts of Caroline and Spotsylvania. And before we get out of here, we'll talk about how you can get a hold of Delegate Orrock. And if you want to make a meeting with him during the session when he'll be around here, we'll talk about that before we get out. You were saying that you've got a few bills that, I mean, bills have been at, it looks like it's going to be, what, seven, you said?
We've been limited to seven.
Seven.
Speakers, fiat. I've only so far done three, and that may be all I do. One is relative to our state parks, which are such a tremendous resource for our citizens and such an asset to the state. They don't have a stable funding stream,
mm-hmm.
that it very much is contingent on the rest of the budget, and they're kind of far down in the priorities. So to have the Department of Conservation and Recreation look at some means of coming up with a stable funding stream for them and present that proposal to the legislature. It's a little self-study for them to look at where we can get some resources for them. Additionally, volunteers within our communities are a tremendous asset to the local governments and the community as a whole. And there's very little that local government can do to incentivize individuals to assist out. Well, this would be a bill that would be permissive and allow a local government to pass an ordinance establishing certain, as an example, if a community had a litter pickup volunteer team,
yeah,
and that same community had a litter fee, that potentially if you participated in the litter cleanup volunteer group, they could waive that fee as a reward for your helping out the community. Fire and rescue volunteers, similarly, they could come up with a means whereby certain fees the county levies could be forgiven if you did X amount of hours of service.
Well, that'd be a big help to some.
I would think anything we can do to incentivize individuals mm-hmm. to give of their time and talents freely, as it were, is a plus for everybody. The caveat, it can't go against your property taxes because the Constitution precludes that, but other fees that the county government might implement could be, and this is 100% local government driven. They can if they want to. They can't do it without going through the ordinance process. They would have full public hearings on the proposal. The other one that I put in is at the request of folks within our special needs and mental health community, where there are abuse situations that may arise. Right now, there's a reporting, but the specifics of the type of abuse aren't a part of the report. And as it relates to a potential investigation, the specifics of what type of abuse and injuries were inflicted can be very important. And so it's legislation that will just require a more thorough disclosure of the circumstances of the abuse and neglect. And hopefully that can become a mitigating factor in addressing the penalties down the road as well.
You always have, we've talked in the past, we've spent a lot of times in the past years talking about fences and things. I mean, you do really get all of your bill ideas, a lot of them, just from really local people.
I don't sit around during the months in between and think, well, what can I put in as a bill-wise? It's almost 100% local-driven, or in the case of the latter, where an agency or department will come to me with a need, and be, in particular now because of my tenure over the process, I may have a little better understanding of the issue than some other newer folks, and so they come to me to ask me to carry it for them.
You mentioned if people want to get a hold of you during the session, you'll be local. How do they get? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
If they're looking on the website and they call the Richmond contact number, they'll still get an answer, but someone in Richmond will be screening it because here again, because of fiat from our speaker, the Richmond office is closed to the public, even the press. Even my immediate family could not go in the building with me. That only me as an individual member and my assistant can go in. So we're not going to be going to Richmond unless I've got a scheduled appointment for some reason.
Yeah.
But if you call the Richmond number, they'll get the information and forward it. I don't know that the call itself will be forwarded directly. It may be a message. But they can call my local office. My assistant will be in 9 to 5, and that number is 891-1322. It's a single line, so if they get a busy signal, you know, I'm sorry, they'll just have to be patient.
Yep.
Dawn will get to it as quickly as she can and just call back, and she'll be taking appointments for face-to-face meetings. The internet is a great way to communicate your views on an issue, and that gives me the opportunity to read them in advance of any conversation we may have after the fact. So I would suggest that as well.
891-1322, as we have talked, and it's really what I expected. I think there's kind of disappointment in the way state government's running right now, and especially how this session's going to go.
But I'm the eternal optimist, and even though yesterday in Washington pointed to a very dark time in American history, I think this is going to be looked back upon as a darker time, and a better form of representative democracy will be coming than what we've got right now. Maybe modified from what we had in the past to a measure, but we've got to have that public access, that public discourse, and get to true government as we're supposed to.
Caroline Delegate, Bobby Orrick from the 54th District, parts of Caroline and Spotsylvania. Bobby, always great to talk to you. Look forward to talking to you again during the session. Thanks.
Thank you, Ted. Happy New Year to all.
That's it. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.